It's good to see everyone out tonight, especially those who are visiting. We want to welcome you and make sure that you know that you're welcome. And thank you for taking your time out to assemble with God's people as you are doing here tonight. The sermon lesson of sorts is going to be a little bit different than normal. There have been over the past 9 or 10 years, various questions and explanations that have been asked of me to kind of present to certain to various congregations that I've been a member of, and that is going to kind of be the case tonight. So to kind of lead as an introduction into this lesson, we've got the holidays are starting to come up. You know, we have, of course, Thanksgiving this Thursday, but does anybody know what comes after that day? Yes, our glorified shopping day, Black Friday, in which prices are heavily discounted and people stand in line for hours before the break of day running in to actually get a particular item that they want. Now, I will admit to you, I have actually done that. There is, to a certain extent, a thrill of doing that. I get it. Some people believe that, you know, that crosses a line with materialism. It really does depend on your reasoning for doing that. I was out there with my grandmother, so that kind of made it a little more interesting. Especially whenever you see somebody turn the corner, make a mad dash straight for the Target shopping place, dive over the counter, grab all of the disposable cameras they can, set them on the counter, do that a couple times, jump back over the counter, grab them, make a mad dash for the checkout. That's the excessive part. I kid you not, true story. But anyway, that's generally what happens. And so with a lot of these discounts, what do kids, teenagers, young adults probably generally across the board ask for? Something electronic. Do they not? Something electronic. They may want the new PS5 that's come out, if you can get your hands on it. Lucky you. The new Xbox, iPhone, please don't get an iPhone, get the Android. I just personally don't like Apple. That's my personal opinion on it. But things, these are usually on the wish list. And electronics are all well and good. They're convenient. They can be an access for instant information, entertainment. But what they can also do is they can be habit-forming. They can actually cause changes in a person's behavior, and there can also be a temptation for improper use. Now, let's get a little bit of an understanding about what I have here in my hand. I believe the year was 1969. The Apollo 11 went up, and all of that. So at that particular point, if I got the year wrong, just correct me later. I'm not the greatest history buff. I mainly like other stuff, but all of NASA at that particular time, all of it, the computing power of all of NASA all over the United States did not have as much computing power as this particular device that I'm holding in my hand. This device right here could have done anything that NASA across the United States needed to do collectively. That's how much power is in this particular device right here. Now, why do I say that? Because with great power comes great responsibility. In fact, those of you who operate a Linux machine, sometimes if you try to sudo into something, which is gain administrative privileges, sometimes that will actually come up as something that you need to be aware of, and it prompts you for that. Of course, if you're doing something like that, you would already know that that has great responsibility. But I want to specifically talk about tonight where some of the dangers lie in electronics in general, and we will get specific to cell phones. Now, over the course of about 9 years, I've been able to talk with young people about electronics. There are some that I've actually mentored. There are some whom I've actually helped with addictions of certain types. And these are kind of the questions that have come up and the questions that I've had to deal with. So they're going to sort of seem like they're all over the place. But tonight I do want to, discuss electronics and certain things that are needed to be known about them. And given the time that we are looking at right now, in which, you know, you're probably looking at a particular list that you've been given for what to purchase. I think that this verse right here in Ecclesiastes, the first chapter, verse 1, speaks relevant to that. To everything, there is a season and a time for every purpose under heaven. I think this lesson would be befitting this particular time. In addition to that, in verse 6, and we'll look at this again, there is a time to gain and there is a time to lose, a time to keep and a time to throw away. So with that, I want to look at a few points tonight dealing with the dangers of electronics. I timed this lesson out, so I might be going a little bit fast on some of these. Excuse me. All right, point number one, the addictive nature of electronics. According to the FamilyAddictionSpecialist.com, they started to answer the question of why they are dangerous. And I'm just going to do a little bit of reading here. I'm going to let the subject matter experts speak for me, because they mainly have done more research than I have, and they can articulate things a lot better than I can. The website says, contrary to popular belief, technology addictions can be extremely dangerous and contribute to various neurological, psychological, and social problems. Digital addictions affect individuals and families in other destructive and dangerous ways. For example, digital addictions can have detrimental effects on an individual's career or education as they spend their time engaging in digital usage rather than focusing on school or work-related tasks. Digital addiction can lead to procrastination and avoidance of work. Digital addictions also can impede on relationships as the individual loses interest in socializing or communication at the expense of their digital device. They further go on to say that technology is a breeding ground for social isolation. Technology addiction can also lead to severe physical health problems such as headaches, weight gain or loss, backaches, and carpal tunnel syndrome. Often, digital dependencies can also lead to insomnia, poor sleep hygiene, and can also contribute to underlying mental health conditions and increased stress levels. Excessive digital usage can also impede on physical health as a result of poor nutrition, lack of physical exercise, and inadequate self-care. All right, so that's just a summation of some of the dangers that electronics can have. All right, next question. What are the signs of technology addiction? The article continues by saying the closest thing which diagnoses classified... The closest such diagnosis classified by the American Psychiatric Association, or the APA, is the Internet Gambling Disorder, a subset of gambling disorder. Internet addiction has been formally recognized by the APA in addition to the World Health Organization. Some of the signs of technology addiction can include inability to moderate or abstain from technology or a specific digital medium, preoccupation with thinking about technological devices, consumptive technological use or experiencing cravings and urges to use digital devices, neglecting important life areas such as work, school, relationships at the expense of technology, losing interest in social and leisure activities that you once enjoyed at the expense of technology, using digital devices to induce pleasure or experience gratification, lying or hiding digital usage from family, friends, colleagues as a result of guilt or shame, and using digital devices for longer durations than intended, or finding yourself using digital devices with increased frequency over time. By the way, that is not an exhaustive list. That is just a summation of some of the signs of technology addiction. All right. So what types of addictions are there? This is not an exhaustive list either, but the first one we'll look at is the gaming addiction. Gaming addiction often appears as socially engaging, but it can often lead to a false sense of social interaction. Some of today's most popular games include Fortnite, World of Warcraft, League of Legends, and several others. Part of what makes gaming so addictive is that there are built-in rewards, hidden features, and side quests. Every time an individual completes a level, beats a boss, kills an opponent, unlocks a new player or level, the individual receives a boost of dopamine, resulting in game-inducing pleasure. And some of these games are never-ending. They just continue to go on and on. Another type of addiction would be social media. Social media platforms such as TikTok, Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, Snapchat, and others are highly addictive, and even YouTube can be thrown into this category. Every time an individual receives an engagement, such as a like, follow, a comment, the individual's brain releases feel-good neurotransmitters, ultimately resulting in wanting more engagement. Social media, like social gaming, can invoke a false sense of social engagement, leaving individuals feeling isolated and alone. Endless scrolling of social media feeds, constantly refreshing the feeds, or binge-watching on TikTok or YouTube videos also serve as a way to fend off loneliness, fight off boredom, and fill other psychological voids. A fear of missing out also play a large part in the social media addiction. It is also important to note that social media addictions can involve vanity, such as posting selfies, using filters, and placing an emphasis on the physical appearance of one's self. Next addiction, online gambling. This includes, but is not limited to, online casino games, online poker, online sports betting, esports gambling, and the like. Internet gambling disorder is recognized by the APA as a diagnosable mental health disorder. Of all the various forms of addictions, including substance use addictions, gambling addiction has the highest rates of suicide. As such, it is imperative to address the problem of gambling as soon as the issue arises. There's also the pornography addiction. We won't go that now. We'll go with that later. Online shopping addiction. Ooh, that one might hit home a little bit. An online shopping addiction, also known as compulsive buying disorder, is a behavioral addiction that involves impulsive and compulsive buying of goods and services online. Online shopping addictions often serve as a temporary way to induce pleasure and feel good as a way of avoiding negative emotions and evading boredom. Online shopping is not only about the purchasing in and of itself, but is also about the excitement of browsing prior to the purchase. Now, Paul has something to say about this in 1 Corinthians 6, verse 12, when he says, "All things are lawful for me, but all things are not helpful. All things are lawful for me, but I will not be brought under the power of any." Considering what we have just looked at, what is Paul saying here? Well, with the ones like social media, online shopping, and gaming, the all things are lawful for me, is there anything wrong with gaming? Is there anything wrong with looking at social media? Is there anything wrong with online shopping? I would imagine that we would have had to do without an awful lot of things last year in the March, April, May time frame if there was something wrong with online shopping, which in fact there is not. Okay? And that's kind of what Paul's saying here, is that these things are okay until they become something that takes over your life and you can't seem to do without. That's where it becomes a problem. And that's why I went over these these various addictions to kind of show what they are and what could be what they could be a problem with. So the next point we're going to look at is the appropriate and inappropriate uses in worship. Now, we're probably going to be honing in a little bit more on the cell phones and the tablets and things like that. I have yet to see in my 34 years somebody bring a PlayStation 5 or an Xbox into the worship and start playing it. So we're probably not talking about that right now. So the first question to ask, is it okay to use a cell phone in church or in the worship? And this is the exact phrasing of a question that was asked by religiondispatches.org when they sent out a survey to 3,000 adults. And in this, they asked the respondents to gauge the appropriateness of the use of cell phones, quote, at church or worship service. A full 96% of those surveyed chose generally it's not okay, which, interestingly enough, was only slightly higher than those who condemn mobile usage in a movie theater. So at least people are paying a little bit more heed to it being in a worship service than watching a movie. In addition to this, LifewayResearch.com also sent out a survey asking what people use their cell phones for in a worship, and the results were expected. People use Bible apps, note-taking, finding references, and things of that nature. Several years ago, my aunt and uncle I was worshiping with them, and down in Atlanta, and they actually had full-out laptops in the building, and were actually utilizing them. Upon a little bit further look at them, they actually had something similar to eSword on one side of the screen, and had a Microsoft Word document or equivalent up on the other side of the screen. And so, as they were listening to the lesson or in Bible class, they were actually sitting there taking notes and using the eSword to kind of reference various things whenever they wanted to expand on what the speaker was talking about. And, you know, personally, this is my opinion, I'll label it as such, I don't see a problem with having any of these devices in the worship service as long as they are being used appropriately. There are other things that we can actually use, maybe not during the worship, but probably more conducive to a classroom environment would be something such as Kahoot. We use that quite a bit in class. I know the kids in my middle school class, they ask me every single time I walk in that door, well, I'm usually there before them, every time they walk in the door, are we using Kahoot? Are we doing Kahoot? Are we doing Kahoot? They really do love that game. Okay, but you know, that's one of those things that you can utilize to really get them engaged and involved in what you're trying to teach them. Earlier this year, Jeff Archer actually had a class for a quarter on teaching methods. And I think Jeff was out on doing something. I think he was at a gospel meeting. So Jeff Donovan actually stepped in. And he's a teacher for the public schools. And I believe so anyway. He's a teacher for a school. And he actually gave some suggestions and some experience from his own about how he incorporates the usage of electronics, various apps, and things like that into his teaching. And so that was a really great thing to learn. And so, you know, I would say, in my opinion, no, there's absolutely nothing inherently wrong with utilizing your device in a worship service. Again, like I said, my opinion. All right, let's look at this question. What is not okay? All right, so some of these things probably shouldn't need to be said, but unfortunately they have to be because of some of the things that I have actually seen in my time actually worshiping with various congregations. There are many instances in which a cell phone would be considered inappropriate in worship, and let me give you two cases in which I have actually seen with my own eyes. One of them was somebody shopping on Amazon during the lesson. Probably not a good use of your time. The other one was a little bit more egregious, in my opinion, in which somebody was scrolling through Facebook during the Lord's Supper, took his phone out right before the prayer. We all prayed. He had put it down, picked it back up again, took the bread, started scrolling through his feed. Not quite the best use of a cell phone in the worship. Kind of tells where your heart is at. These are just two examples of the many possibilities that you could have of browsing or utilizing your cell phone in the worship. Now, let me give you another case here in which it's okay to utilize your cell phone. However, it may not be the best idea. And I'm probably going to be talking a little bit more to the young adults all the way down to maybe the middle schoolers in this one. But this just comes from my personal experience. Whenever you go to another congregation, you're visiting, or maybe you've moved somewhere, you know, and later on in your adult lives, and you go to a new congregation. Please be aware of your surroundings when, even if you are using your electronic device for the correct reasons. I'm going to give you an example here. Whenever I moved from Arizona down to Louisiana, down in 2012, I believe it was, the congregation that I went to there, the majority of the congregation was ages 60 and older. There were only five of us out of the 50, 60 some odd people that were there that were below the age of 60. myself being the oldest. The gap, me being in my mid-20s, the next person older than me was in his 60s. Lower than that, there was a 15-year-old young lady, and then it just went downhill from there. So there were only five below the age of 60. I really didn't think anything of it. I would, you know, use my cell phone in the worship, you know, to do appropriate things with. However, what I really didn't realize was, given the demographics of that congregation, there were actually people there who really did not like the idea of me having a cell phone in use during the worship, regardless of what I was using it for. And young people, there are going to be some places that you go that the congregation has a majority of people that think just like this. And, you know, you may be, as I said, using them in the correct way, but they may not look approvingly at the use of these devices. And so I would encourage you that that even though they may not come out and say it, that you be an example to these believers by esteeming others better than yourself, which is our theme for this year, by the way. And so, I would just encourage you to be aware of that, be aware of your surroundings, and accommodate their feelings in that way, if at all possible. First Timothy 3:15 says, "But if I am delayed, I write so that you may know how you ought to conduct yourself in a house of God, which is the church of the living God, the pillar and ground of the truth." If we are going to bring our devices into the worship, please, let's use these appropriately so that we may act and conduct ourselves appropriately in the house of God. All right, next point. Something else that I've been asked about multiple times, actually, during the past 10 some odd years, are ways to actually monitor a child's cell phone. I've had multiple sets of parents actually come up to me asking me, you know, how do I actually know what my child is doing? How do I track them? How do I do this? How do I do that? And, you know, giving a child a device without, you know, realizing its full capability can sometimes be rather scary. But there are a few things, a few pieces of software here that you can utilize in order to help keep your child safe, depending on where your prerogative lies of what your focus is. Let me give you an example here. MSPI, the first one. If you are concerned more with keeping your kids physically safe and even safe on the internet, this one would actually be a good one for you to use. This one is described as having a GPS locator, so you know where your kids are really at. It's kind of like somebody comes up to you and say, "Hey, you know where your kid's at?" It's like, "Yeah, I know where my kid's at." No. Do you know where your kid is at? "Well, yeah, they're over here at such and such a place." "Yeah, well, I saw them over here." Do you really know where they're at? And this particular device or a piece of software right here will actually aid in actually knowing where your child is at. This also has the ability to aid in the protection of cyberbullying, inappropriate content, and suspicious contacts. Phone calls and texts and things of that nature. This also allows parents to block websites, applications, and even specific callers. NetNanny. If you are worried about filtering web content and internet time limits, this particular piece of software is probably for you. This creates different restrictions and profiles based on each child. All right, let me give you an example here. If you have an 8-year-old and a 17-year-old, are you going to give the 17-year-old the same amount of restrictions as the 8-year-old? My personal opinion on that, probably not. I don't have two children that are that age. So that would be my guess. Hey, you may have restrictions on the same for the 17 and the 8-year-old. I don't know. I don't have kids that are that age yet. So, but given that as an example, so if my 17-year-old, not mine, but a 17-year-old is on the internet, and they just log into their profile, then they're able to do X, Y, and Z. However, that 8-year-old actually gets onto their profile, well, they're not able to do as much. You can control that and therefore monitor what they are allowed to do, you know, with the peace of mind. In addition to that, the net nanny can also give you time allowances. They can give you 30-minute blocks of time that a particular user is able to access the internet or do various activities on the internet. You can also put it to where, you know, during certain hours, such as bedtime hours, there is no logging in at all. For example, if you want to set the maybe not necessarily the bedtime, but hey, all internet activity is blocked at 8 o'clock in the morning. You can't access it until, or excuse me, 8 o'clock at night, and you can't access it until 8 o'clock in the morning. Then that's a restriction that you can put on there. Or you know, during what would be considered a, what do you call them, school nights? Is that what you call them? I probably should have asked one of the younger people that one earlier. You know, if you have school the next day, okay, maybe, you know, you drop it down, you set a certain level. But on the weekends, hey, you know, you've got an extra hour of time in which you can actually utilize that. Things like that. It can also set weekly internet limits. Okay, for the eight-year-old, I only want them to be online for an average of 1 hour per day. Okay, so I'm going to give them 7 hours per week. And as they're on there and they're actually utilizing it, that time starts ticking down. If they run out on Friday, too bad. You're not doing anything on Saturday until Sunday comes around again. The 17-year-old, hey, you may decide, okay, well, 14 hours is appropriate, an average of 2 hours a day. So, you know, you can utilize things like that with Net Nanny. There's also Mama Bear. If you are needing something more conducive to social media and location tracking, this one also monitors Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, as well as other social media sites and applications. This also monitors inappropriate language by building a restrictive word list. Now, here's what you can do with this. You can actually build your own word list, but you know, kids start abbreviating everything, don't they? There might be a specific word, and obviously they're not going to text that, but they might use a 2-3-4 letter abbreviation for that. Well, if you know what that is, you can actually take that and put it into the list. That way, that can't be used or it can't be received. And so, you know, that's another way you can actually monitor the language aspect. This will also give you a notification when your teenager. I'm going to get so much flack for this one. This will give you a notification when your teenager drives over a set speed limit that you have set for them. If your teenager is going from point A to point B, and you know that the highest speed limit that is on that route is 55, and they end up going 57, 58, you're going to get a notification saying, hey, your kid went over the speed limit. So that's another way to kind of keep that in check when you're not able to keep your eyes on them. I was kind of debating on whether to put this up there because this can actually be abused. But I'm going to go ahead and put this on there, and I'm not meaning abusing as far as a parent to a child, but just please don't do this to your spouse. This one is conducive to when a child is ignoring or just plain missing the calls when you're trying to get a hold of them. What Respond ASAP will do is it will freeze and lock the phone. It will sound a notification and force the child to call you back before the phone is unlocked. So if they're out there on their phone and you know, you call and it's like, nope, don't want to talk to mom right now. Don't want to talk to mom. She's calling again. Don't want to talk to mom. Now dad's calling. Oh boy. Yeah, I don't want to talk to him either. Well, you can utilize this app right here to lock their phone up and they can't access their phone until they call you back. The only problem with this, maybe this would get some people to stop using Apple so much, is this is only available on Android right now. Sorry, Apple users, you're out of luck. All right, YouTube for Kids. Last one on this point. This one is conducive to those who want to make sure that the kids that are watching YouTube videos are watching only kid-friendly videos. This also blocks ads and links. Okay, sometimes in the description there will be a link there to say, hey, check out more videos on, you know, this link right here. They click that link, it'll take them somewhere else. Not with this right here. This one will block that, even in the comments. If there's a comment section and somebody posts a link in the comments and they click on that link, it's not going to take them anywhere. It blocks those. So that's always a good thing. You can build a custom profile for your kids. You can block specific channels or videos. You can always check their history, and you can even set time limits for how long they're actually on YouTube. Now, having said that, it is my opinion, and I'm going to label it as such, that YouTube, even with this application right here, is not safe for kids anymore. In fact, I would probably recommend that YouTube be highly restricted. I'm going to tell you why. Because even with YouTube Kids, there is still content on there that is allowed through to be considered kid-friendly that basically promote things that we as Christians cannot adhere to. Just one example of that would be a boy identifying as a girl identifying as a boy, that type of thing. Okay, there is still that stuff on YouTube Kids. And so you have to be very highly alert in order to be able to filter all that out. So that's why I say YouTube is not quite a safe choice anymore for really anybody. Okay. All right, next one. So one of the reasons for actually bringing this up is because those of us who have children, we know that children are a gift from the Lord and they are a reward from Him. And, you know, as being given those gifts, God has also placed on us a responsibility to protect our children. All right, last point. This one's probably going to take a little bit longer than the rest, but I'll try to move through this one quickly. There's a few things that I want to deal with when it comes to pornography in general. The first one I want to address is how exactly pornography actually gets to you and finds you out. Let me say this, that the pornography industry does their absolute best to seek out young men and women. Yes, women are included in that, and I will give you some statistics later. They seek them out at a young age in order to get them hooked on this and to further increase the revenue from their industry. And there's a lot of ways that they do this. Let me give you one example. In January of 2017, the Daily Mail, which is a British website, said that there is a simple trick that exploits the back door of YouTube and allows uploaders to YouTube's site hosting services to host adult videos. The technique bypasses both Google and YouTube's security checks, and it appears there's not very much they can do to prevent it. So how exactly do they get around it? They upload the video by not publicly listing it, and it is that way that they are able to get around their safeguards. That's about as much detail as I was able to find without trying to do some of that myself. One of the California-based adult content makers said that this particular vulnerability, that's pretty much how I'll label it, has not gone unnoticed in the adult industry and is really being exploited, again, specifically in this case, on YouTube. And so that's one of the reasons I said, even with YouTube Kids, be careful. Be very careful with that. All right, as I said earlier, the target is not just on young men, but it is on young women as well. This comes from this information comes from Webroot, which is an internet security firm. In one of their articles, they answer the question of how much pornography is accessible online. Some of the statistics they laid out, every second there are over 28,000 people who are watching this type of content, and the industry is generating over $3,000 per second. Every day, there are about 2.5 billion emails containing pornography that are sent or received. All right, so let me elaborate on this particular part just a little bit. Sometimes people can receive an email. In fact, I think there was one earlier this year, it wasn't quite like this, where somebody from that we didn't know had gotten a hold of somebody's email and basically spammed the entire Jordan Park emails list. So what you can do with these emails is you can type up an email, you can put a link in there, and you can have the link say whatever you want. Say it's Facebook.com. Okay, I have a link, and it says www.facebook.com. All right? And what they will do is they'll say, hey, here's a link to this particular website. Then they'll give you the link. Then you press on it, and it takes you somewhere completely different that the link or the body of text in the email told you, hey, that wasn't where you were going to go, and you end up going to somewhere else that you did not intend. So this is how a lot of this stuff gets redirected to sites that we really don't want to go to by an unsuspecting victim actually clicking on that link. Okay, this is to a certain extent a form of what a hacker would do. This particular thing of actually taking a link and redirecting to another site, I can do that. I have done it. Not maliciously, but I had to take a hacking examination about 2 or 3 years ago, and this is one of the tasks that I had to perform. What I could do is I could make a link called facebook.com, and I could redirect you anywhere on the internet that I wanted to. Just be aware that these things are out there. If you don't know the recipient, if anything on that email looks suspicious, do not click the link. Let me give you one more tip on how to understand or how to know if that link goes exactly where it says it's going to. You got your body of text that says, hey, we're going to take you to Facebook.com. Take your mouse, hover over the link. Do not press the link. Leave your mouse over the link. Go to the bottom left-hand side of the page, and there is going to be an address down there of where it's really going to go. That's one of the indicators of how you know if that is a link that is really going to Facebook or it's going somewhere else. Just something to be aware of. Pornography affects Americans of the number of about 40 million people who visit these sites on a regular basis and have been classified as addicted to pornography. 34% of internet users have experienced unwanted exposure to pornographic content through the uses of ads, pop-up ads, misdirected links. I just talked to you about that. Or emails. Okay, these misdirected links are actually embedded in the emails. You see them there. They also state that 1/3 of pornography viewers are women. And as I said before, this is not just a boys and men's problem. Okay, this is a women and young ladies problem too. They are also targets. There are some symptoms of some people who are addicted to pornography. Whenever one is consumed with thoughts of pornography, even when they are not actively watching it, they continue to watch it despite the harm it's having on their relationships, on work, or even in their home life. And even when they have tried to quit watching pornography but have not been successful. Some of the research indicates that porn addiction has been shown to cause changes in the brain that are similar to those experienced by people who use drugs. This observation suggests that both psychological and physiological factors may play a part in compulsive pornography use. All right. Suggestions on home rules for electronics. All right. Some of these I've gotten from other people. Or at least most of them. Some of them are my suggestions, but one of the first ones is keep computers in a public place in the home. This one actually came from a preacher that I heard. I don't know where I was. I don't know how long ago this was. It was well over 10 years ago. But what he was talking about is a son that he had that had turned 12 to 13, and he was about ready to enter the next grade that fall. The computer was sitting in a public area right in the middle of the living room so everybody could look at it if they needed to. And so he actually was doing some research on teen schooling, and that's exactly what he put into the search browser. Dad comes back in a few minutes later. The son is gone. He sees what's on the screen, and he calls his son after getting rid of it. It's like, why was that there? And his son told him what had happened. He did not do that intently. He clicked on a link that he thought was he was supposed to go to, and it redirected him somewhere else. In the innocence of his heart, he was accidentally exposed. It was not his fault. And furthermore, I might add that the father seemingly did a very good job in handling a situation like that. He didn't get all flustered and upset and things like that, but he handled that, I think, very, very well. Another suggestion might be to gather the electronics up before bed and redistribute them out whenever the parent feels is appropriate. And so I'm going to talk just a minute about the cognitive stimulation caused by screens before bedtime. One statistic states that 6 in 10 kids don't get enough sleep, and anywhere between 2 and 11-year-olds are getting less sleep than what they need, making them sleep-deprived. In fact, the average of those who don't get enough sleep are averaging at about 60% altogether. And a lot of this actually comes from the stimulation of the brain caused by blue light. You all probably have seen me wear these glasses. In fact, I was wearing them right before I got up here. There's a reason why. These blue light filtering. Blue light actually comes into my eyes and kind of, you know, stimulates my brain and my eyes, causing eye fatigue. And that's why I wear these. These right here are brutal on my eyes. They cause a lot more strain on my eyes than what our previous projectors did. That is not a complaint. These right here. Okay, I'm not complaining about those. In fact, I like these a lot better, to be honest with you. I just have to deal with that a little bit more. These right here are considered gaming glasses. If you can actually see, there's actually yellow in these. These are a really good thing to wear if you have problems sleeping at night. My wife actually did some research while I was working on some doctorate stuff, and she said, hey, there is a certain range of blue light that's actually harmful for you and will kind of keep you up at night. Well, I got myself these right here. Oh, I have slept so much better ever since. I'm so happy that I got these. And so I utilize these at work and usually whenever I'm around any place that emits blue light. Another thing that you can do for your rules on electronics is keep internet safety software on the computer. And if you're ever in doubt about what to do in a particular situation, ask someone. Okay, you can come ask me. I'm not sure I'm going to have all the answers for you. In fact, I know for a fact I don't. There are others here at Jordan Park that you could seek out their help, ones that have much more experience than myself. All right, for those who are actually engaged in pornography, and I'm actually bringing this up just in case somebody actually comes back later on in the future wanting to see part of this video, I want to talk a little bit about some of the things you can possibly do. But first, before I do that, one who is actually into pornography is probably feeling shame and discouragement to one degree or another. So let's talk about a few things that hopefully will help with this and give you the courage you need to get help. I know I'm running late here, and I knew I had a lot of material, but if you'll bear with me, I'm going to try to get through this. First off, one thing that you need to know is that you are not alone. Statistics show that over 40% of internet users view pornography. Additionally, 47% of Christians admit that pornography is a problem in their home, whether it's themselves or somebody else. Now, here's what I'm not doing. I am not sharing with you these figures to normalize your struggle. Rather, I am trying to show you that your struggle is not uncommon. In fact, it is all too common. In fact, chances are that while you're sitting here feeling isolated because you know you feel ashamed of what you've done, that there are statistically people in your life that feel the exact same way. Number two, all of us have sin. That's indisputable. The Bible says that all of us have sinned and come short of the glory of God, and there isn't a single righteous person. But you are doing absolutely the right thing by trying to seek accountability and repentance. And there are some things that you can do to put some measures in place. First off, you can get some professional help. There are New Testament Christians out there that actually help people who have gotten stuck in the addiction of pornography. Okay? The other thing that you can do, you can get a dumb phone. Okay? Smartphone, dial-up phone with T9 texting, that's a dumb phone. Okay, it would take a lot of the temptations that one would have utilizing a cell phone away. Or you can actually get rid of the phone altogether. Matthew chapter 5, verse 29 says, if your right eye causes you to sin, pluck it out and cast it from you. For it is more profitable for you that one of your members perish than for your whole body to be cast into hell. And this is kind of where we go back to the verse that I read at the beginning of this lesson. That there is, to everything, there is a season and a time for every purpose under heaven. In verse 6, the second part, there's a time to keep and there's a time to throw away. And this, if you are in something like that, this may be that time to throw it away. All right, last point here. Helping children, teens, young adults. All right, some of this comes from some people that I've actually talked to who have helped young adults, teens, get through, you know, their addictions and things like that. Others are people of that age who have come to me with their pornography addiction, asking for help myself. And I have gotten quite a few stories about reactions from parents or other trusted adults that they had in their life. Now, parents, I am not trying to tell you how to parent. I'm not trying to do that at all. I'm simply relaying some things to you that I think just asking you to think on them. I'm just asking you to understand that your young man or woman really wants to live right and in a God-honoring way, or else they would not have approached you in the first place. But please realize that they need help in fighting what is seemingly a losing war that they are in. They're realizing that it's a struggle to get out of this, and they're reaching out for help. Just think about some of the things that they are possibly going through. They may be going through discouragement from feeling powerless after many failed attempts to stop. They may be scared or living in fear because they can't seem to win, and they slowly start to realize how deep of a rut they're in and how this is affecting their lives. They may even be afraid to tell you for fear of repercussions or how you might react or what you might think of them or how disappointed in them you'll be. How you react is going to set the groundwork for their trust in you with this type of information, with the struggle that they have. If you lose that trust, they may never ask you again for help in overcoming this addiction and go elsewhere for help. That is, if they can muster the courage to do so. Again, this is a suggestion, but I would suggest a little bit of a shift in thinking on how you view your child or your grandchild in this particular case. And that is, don't look at them as your child or your grandchild. Look at them as a brother or sister in Christ reaching out for help, as if someone in this room right here was reaching out to you. Now, if they have not made the decision to become a Christian yet, then guess what? You have been given an additional golden opportunity to add to your influence in your child's life and to bear this burden with them during their time of struggle. Let him know that he who turns a sinner from the error of his way will save a soul from death and cover a multitude of sins. That is the opportunity that you will have been given, but you've got to make sure to do it in the right and appropriate way. As I said, these are some of the bigger things that have been asked of me and presented to me in the past some 10 odd years. And I felt, given the time of the season in which electronics are pretty high on the asking wish list, this would be a good time to present something like this. Not much has been said, except till the very end, about becoming a Christian. But if you're not a Christian and you realize that you need to become one, and you're starting to feel the weight of sin on you, knowing that you need a Savior in your life, and guess what? When you become a Christian, you'll have added the most powerful ally in your struggle with sin that you will ever have. If you have named Jesus Christ as your Savior and you need the help and the prayers of the congregation, you may be struggling with something like this, or maybe an addiction of another kind, struggling with sin in general. That's what a family is here for. We're here to help you. We're not going to shame you. We're not going to do anything of the sort. We're going to be there for you and give you whatever help that we can possibly offer. If you're subject to the invitation at this time, please let it be known as we stand and sing a selected song.